Hi, this is Nancy Rosenzweig, host of the Women's Health Show at WGXC.org. Today's show, we're going to be having a somewhat question and answer session. I've been speaking with some young women I know, and there are a lot of misconceptions out there, and there are a lot of questions about what's normal and what's not normal. So we're going to start right at the beginning.
Well, Nancy, when you came in today and asked me if I had some women's health questions, I didn't even know. We started talking about the work that you do as a midwife. I didn't even know that I was misinformed about the work of a midwife. I've actually listened to your show in the past, and I have a lot of friends who have midwives in their lives, and I would have assumed that, or I thought I had a pretty clear idea about what that work meant. You were just telling me that a midwife does more than just deliver babies or work with pregnant women, that you work with women who are not delivering babies also. And that was something that was totally news to me. I didn't even know that I had that question. What does a midwife do?
Well, the word midwife describes what we do. Midwife means with women. As long as history has been documented, midwives have been attending women in labor and birth, providing a reassuring presence, hands-on labor support, sage advice to help women navigate the unpredictable forces of nature, and skilled hands to guide the baby's birth. It means with woman. It doesn't mean without pain medication or without physicians when they are needed. But in our current society, the profession of midwifery has really evolved. The modern midwife now provides comprehensive women's health care from adolescence through menopause. Most midwives, especially certified nurse midwives, are independent women's health care providers. And what that means is we're trained and we're licensed. We can perform annual GYN physical exams. We can prescribe medications for birth control, for the treatment of infections. We counsel women on available screening tests for sexually transmitted infections, for cancer. And we see women throughout their pregnancy for routine prenatal care.
So do you get contacted as a midwife by someone who is not pregnant for regular GYN stuff? Does that happen?
Absolutely, all the time. In fact, I took a break from catching babies for the past 5 years and only did GYN. I worked privately with some women. I worked at a clinic in New York City, and I was their main healthcare provider.
And is there a reason why someone might want to work with a woman who works also as a midwife and not someone who's just in the GYN profession?
Well, in the GYN profession, there are a lot of people. So they're OBGYN doctors. They're family practice doctors who provide GYN care. And they're advanced practice nurses. So there are nurse practitioners out there who just provide GYN care. And then, of course, they're midwives. And I think the whole idea of working with a midwife means that you're working with someone who believes in the concept of normal and not just disease. And so teaching and counseling and listening and spending time getting to know women is one of the major characteristics of midwifery care, that it isn't just, I think I have a urinary tract infection. Okay, here's some antibiotics, take them. I might spend a lot of time with women, even talking about how they wipe themselves when they go to the bathroom, how they have sex, what their sexual practices are, how bacteria gets into the urinary tract. So I think of every encounter with a woman as an opportunity to listen and to teach.
Okay, so that when I got together with some of my friends to think of some of the women's health questions that we have, one of the like kind of underlying questions was, where do we go to get answers to the questions that we do have other than you and our radio show? Because the experience that I have most regularly with doctors is that doctors are busy. And that's a time that it does that you I go when I do have something that I need, that I'm worried about or that I'm concerned about, but I don't ask questions like, what does, like, can you explain to me the anatomy of my privates? I don't know what health professional to have that conversation with to answer some of the questions that don't have to do with disease, like you're saying, but do just have to do with how my stuff works. So how, like, who, if so, like, I do have lots of questions, who how do you find the person who is willing to sit down with you and answer those?
Well, I think first of all, there's a lot of confusion about information people can find online. You know, what's trustworthy, what isn't trustworthy. But I think there's some basic anatomy that anybody can find online. Certainly when my kids were going through puberty, I gave them a book called What's Happening to My Body? And they make one for boys and one for girls. And there's some very, very clearly written language that anybody could understand, and clear diagrams and pictures that really explain what's going on in the anatomy. As women get older, one of the classic books out there is Our Bodies, Ourselves, which has been revisited and reproduced for a more current age. So I would definitely go to those two books. I would go online to some reputable sources. A lot of the governmental sources, like the CDC, so cdc.gov, is a website that's probably the most reputable when it comes to sexually transmitted infections. And, you know, there are other places like the Mayo Clinic. And there's some.
What's the Mayo Clinic?
The Mayo Clinic is a healthcare clinic that does lots and lots and lots of research. And they have a website that you could go to. There's webmd.com. There's a lot of midwifery organizations, like midwife.org has a lot of general information about GYN, not just pregnancy, for women. So many, many resources out there. But what I'm getting from your question is, who can I talk to? And I think the issue is that women should probably start going for an annual GYN visit from the time they start becoming active sexually, rather than just going to a provider when they have a complaint or a problem. If they go for an annual visit when there's nothing wrong with them, there's a lot more time allotted in that visit to just general education.
Well, so maybe I should ask one of the main questions that we had when we were talking about what some of the big question marks that we have. One of them is about getting tested. That's a phrase that we use a lot. Oh, we have to get tested. Have you been tested? I don't know how often I should get tested, and I don't know even what that really means. Tested for what? Are there different tests for different STDs? Where do you go to get tested?
Well, great question. I get women all the time who said to me, well, I had a vaginal exam, so I assume they tested me for everything. And I usually say to them, no, you need to be an active participant in your own healthcare and ask, what are you testing me for? What are the options for testing? How do I get tested? So I'm going to go over a few things. One of the main reasons people go for an annual GYN exam is that they've heard the word PAP. I'm going to get a PAP. And a lot of people don't have a clue what a PAP is. They think every time we put a speculum, which is a device to look inside their vagina, or our fingers in your vagina, we're doing a PAP. And that's just not true. So a PAP smear is a specific test for cervical cancer. Now, the chance of getting cervical cancer when you're very young is about zero. So the current recommendation is that if you're less than 21 years old, you should not be tested with a PAP smear for cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. But once you're 21 years old, then we start the testing. Between 21 and 29, we recommend that you get a test every 3 years. Between 30 and 65, you get a test for PAP and for the virus HPV, human papillomavirus. And you can do that every 3 years or every 5 years if the tests come back negative, which means you don't have cervical cancer and you don't have the virus. Now, young women can get the HPV virus, but they don't really need to be tested for it, because research has shown that women can get it, But when they're healthy, their immune system gets rid of it. And it doesn't really cause any problems. So it's a little irrelevant to test for it. And a little scary as a young woman to hear that you have it. Because you don't really know what it means. So we no longer test women for HPV when they're young.
What does that mean, young?
Well, we don't really test for it between 21 and 29 if your pap smear's normal. If your pap smear comes back saying that some of the cells don't look normal, and that means they might be in the process of being changed because of some sort of inflammation or exposure to HPV, then we do test for HPV. And if a woman between 21 and 29 has an abnormal pap smear and HPV, we might have her go on to do further testing with something called a colposcopy, which is looking through a microscope at the cervix to see if there are any changes leading to cancer. So let's go back to your first question. What does getting tested mean? What does that mean in terms of sexually transmitted infections? Women who are less than 21 who have no interest in having somebody put something inside their vagina can be tested for almost all sexually transmitted infections, either through their urine or through blood tests. So if a woman says, I don't really want that thing going inside my vagina, we can still test you. We can test for chlamydia and gonorrhea through your urine. All you have to do is pee, and we can test that. We can test for syphilis, herpes, hepatitis, and HIV through blood. We can test for HIV through saliva. And if somebody thought they had a herpes outbreak, which typically looks like a blister, we can test with a Q-tip on that blister to see if it's herpes or not.
So are the urine tests and the blood tests, are those something that you have to request?
Yes. Those are called screening tests. Screening tests are different than diagnostic tests. So if somebody comes to me and says, I have a really gross, yellow, smelly discharge, I might look at it, do another test with a Q-tip, and that might test for chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomoniasis. Those are three things I can test with one Q-tip in the vagina to find out if she has any of those tests. But there are a lot of discharges and infections that women can have that are not sexually transmitted. So if somebody comes to me saying, I'm itchy, I have a white discharge, I have a smelly discharge, that might be an alteration in the normal vagina. So our vaginas are filled with lots of different bacteria that keep our vaginas healthy. But sometimes the pH balance changes for some reason, or we get too much bacteria in our vagina, or we get a yeast infection on our vagina, and that changes things and tends to cause symptoms. But we can't always tell just by looking at you what exactly you have.
Well, so that brings up another one of the questions that we had when we got together to think of questions, which was, what are some indicators when discharge is healthy or unhealthy? What is it supposed to look like?
Well, once women have gone through puberty and they're getting periods every month, most women have a kind of clearish, whitish discharge at different times of the month. And when they're ovulating, which is about 2 weeks before they get their period, they might have a kind of thicker, mucousy discharge. But it doesn't usually have a bad odor. It doesn't usually cause a bad itch. This is normal. A lot of women say to me, I see a whitish yellow discharge on my underpants. Is there something wrong with me? And I usually say no. If it's not itchy, if it's not bothering you, if it's not smelly, that's your normal hormonal discharge. That happens to all women. But you can alter it by mucking with your vagina. So by mucking, I mean thinking you're cleaning your vagina by putting a washcloth up your vagina and scrubbing yourself with soap or chemicals or putting a douche up in there. Because what that does actually is not clean your vagina, but it tends to alter your natural way of keeping your vagina clean. So we usually say to women, the only way to clean your vagina is to take a bath or shower and leave it alone. Clean the outside, not the inside.
Clean the outside with soap.
With a gentle soap. Yeah, but don't go up inside your vagina thinking you're cleaning it, because you're probably causing a problem rather than fixing a problem by doing that.
You have segued into another one of the questions that came up that we couldn't think of the answer to, which is, how are you supposed to clean your vagina?
You don't.
You just don't.
You just don't.
It cleans itself.
You trust your vagina that it's going to be different at different times of the month, but it is going to clean itself if you just keep yourself clean. And the way to keep yourself clean is probably take a bath or shower every day, wash on the outside. If you're having sex, you don't have to clean afterwards. If you have your period, you don't have to douche afterwards. All of those things probably cause problems rather than keep yourself clean. So getting back to getting tested, somebody might want to get tested for various things if they have various complaints. So one of the first things women come to me for is they think they have a urinary tract infection. If you have a new sexual partner and you're having a lot of sex and you're not getting up to pee often enough, a lot of times women get UTIs, urinary tract infections, from that. In fact, it used to be called honeymoon cystitis because a lot of sex at once sometimes caused problems in the urinary tract. Mm. So the symptoms of a urinary tract infection are you're going to the bathroom, you're urinating a lot more than you normally do. Another symptom is you have a sense of urgency, like, you know, you really feel like, oh, I have to get to the bathroom really quickly, but then not much comes out. Or you actually have pain, like a spasm in the urinary tract where it hurts when you go to the bathroom. Those tend to be the three symptoms. If you see blood in your urine when you're urinating, that's not particularly normal. So that might be a sign also of an infection. Rarely should women just go treat themselves. I think it's always good to have a urine culture taken. So like any of these problems, where do I go? Well, if you have a regular provider that's a midwife, nurse practitioner, family practice doctor, OBGYN, you can go to any of them. And depending upon where you live and what your insurance is, you can go to an emergent care kind of facility. You can go to a clinic in your neighborhood that provides kind of emergency visit care.
Do you know around here about some of those clinics or any of those?
I think there are a lot of emergent care clinics. I've seen one in Catskill.
What does that mean, emergent care?
It means this is not the person you're going to for your regular preventive health care. You have a problem, you want it to be addressed immediately, and you're avoiding going to a hospital emergency room because this isn't an emergency, but you want care immediately. And maybe the office you normally go to can't fit you in, or maybe you don't have a regular office to go to, and you just want this particular issue addressed today.
So you said there was one in Catskill that you know of?
I know there's one in Catskill. I know there's at least one in Kingston. I think you can probably look online or in a phone book. They're different names, but they're usually something called like urgent care or emergency care.
Where does Planned Parenthood fit in that landscape of women's health services?
Planned Parenthood is a clinic. People can go there for both preventive care and for problem care. Most people think of Planned Parenthood as somewhere to go to have an abortion, but most of the care they do is preventive women's health care, where people go there for complaints, preventive care, screening tests, pap smears, and they're often staffed by nurse practitioners and doctors.
So are some of the emergent or urgent care providers that you just described, are those places where you can go to get the kind of screening tests that we were talking about, the blood and the urine and the...
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
What are those called? They're called STI tests?
Well, they're all different. If you have urinary complaints, you probably want a urine culture and sensitivity. And what that does is you do what's called a clean catch, where you wipe yourself clean, pee into a cup, and then they send it off to a lab to see if bacteria are growing. And if bacteria are growing, they treat that bacteria with different antibiotics so they know exactly which medicine will kill the bacteria that's bothering you. And one thing I would always say to anyone being treated with antibiotics is, I'm a real proponent of taking probiotics on a regular basis. Because a lot of the times, the problems that women complain about, whether it's gastrointestinal, like diarrhea, stomach ache, or vaginal complaints, sometimes they happen because we don't have enough of the really good healthy bacteria in our body to keep our gastrointestinal tract and our vagina from getting infections. So I think probiotics are a great idea.
How do probiotics work?
They work by either replenishing or just adding to the natural flora your body's producing. So our gut needs to have good, healthy bacteria in it so we don't get sick. And that same bacteria often lives in our vagina. One of the healthiest bacteria to have is called lactobacillus. And a lot of people have heard of acidophilus or some of the bacteria that are in yogurts, or especially organic yogurts, or fermented foods like sauerkraut, pickled foods. They're really good for you because they have a lot of really good healthy bacteria that keeps our body healthy.
I've heard people talk about putting some of the things that you described, like yogurt, directly on your vagina.
Some people will do what's called a yogurt douche, and they literally plunge some plain, active bacteria cultured yogurt up into their vaginas. There's not a great deal of research out there to say that it's really helpful, but there's some anecdotal literature that says it's very helpful. Another thing that is supposedly very helpful too is garlic. So one of the treatments for bacteria imbalance is to take a clove of garlic, put it in a gauze pad, put it up your vagina, take it out in the morning. And you could do that like every night for a month. And garlic has incredible antiviral and antibacterial properties. And a lot of people say that that's a great preventive.
The different things that people use during menstruation, tampons, sanitary napkins, and then plastic cups, the Diva cups or keepers. Are there, you know, everybody's heard about toxic shock syndrome and tampons, and I have no idea how afraid we should really be of tampons. I've also never heard conversation about either the safety of or concerns around these reusable plastic cups that people are using.
I think all of that has to do with really basic hygiene. I think that anything you put in your vagina, you should be taking out at least every 4 to 6 hours to clean it out and put it back in. I don't think anything, whether it's a Diva cup or a tampon, should be left in for hours and hours and hours and hours. And I have to tell you, as a provider, this might gross everybody out who's listening, but nothing is more disgusting than a tampon that women forget about and leave in their bodies.
Well, okay, so let's say that happens with either of the things that we're talking about, either tampons or, what are they called? What's the more, I know a Diva cup is a brand, but what are those called as?
They're usually called a brand name.
Yeah.
So a menstrual container, menstrual cup.
If you're a woman and you do, and something does get left in there, how, and you realize that 2 weeks later, and you've heard this radio show, and you're like, oh, I know that's bad. How scared should you be? Like, what does that mean?
Well, I don't think you should be scared unless you have symptoms. Toxic shock affects your whole body. You would have a fever. You might get shakes, the chills. You would feel ill if you had toxic shock. And you would probably go to your healthcare provider in an emergency room because you feel so ill. I've had people come to the clinic just saying to me, I have the most disgusting odor on earth. What's wrong with me? And I look inside their vagina and I see a tampon that's been left in there for 3 weeks. And I gag and I take it out and I talk to them about just basic hygiene, that you can't forget what you put inside. But I think, on the other hand, if you're concerned about the earth, if you're concerned about your body, I think you have to really pay attention and, you know, be responsible for everything you're putting inside your body. And that includes penises, you know? You have to take the responsibility that if you don't want infection, you say to your male partner, you don't get to come inside me unless a condom's on the whole time. You know, being responsible for your body and protecting your body. And the same goes true if you're a woman and you have woman partners. Bacterial vaginosis is extremely contagious between women. If you're using any sexual toys on each other, that infection can live on those toys. So a lot of this just comes down to basic hygiene, knowing how to wipe yourself. Well, most women wipe from back to front. When you wipe from back to front, you're going to get bacteria from your anus into your vagina and urinary tract. And that's one of the main causes of infection. Really basic hygiene, whether it's toilet hygiene, how you clean yourself hygiene, or sexual hygiene, is one of the best things you can learn.
That's wild to think that people know the answer to the questions but don't necessarily act them.
Exactly. I mean, I find it funny, and, you know, I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back, but I think when providers take time to really teach, you can make real change. But if you just say to a woman, you know, wipe front to back, and people say, okay, I wipe front to back, but their hands tell us something different, it's really important. It's a real teaching moment. It's not okay just to hand out antibiotics over and over and over again without trying to figure out what's causing the problem. Sarah, it was so great having you here today, and there's nothing more wonderful than something interactive where I really feel like I can answer questions that are real. If anyone out there has more questions, I'm happy to answer them on future shows, and you can write to info@wgxc.org. And we're welcome to take your questions and find the answers for you on the show. And if you want something answered privately, I can also answer private questions by email. This show will be back the second Monday of every month at 3:00. Bye-bye.